One thing that wasn't in the State of the Union address was any talk of putting a price on carbon. But even if a federal carbon tax feels a long way off, states, including California, have begun to move ahead with cap-and-trade efforts that do put a price on global warming pollution. While we were in Paris at the Historic Climate Summit, we caught up with investor and philanthropist Tom Steyer, who's pledged a sizable amount of his considerable fortune to environmental causes. And he says carbon pricing efforts like California's are exactly what we need around the world to address the grave threats of climate disruption.
When we think about carbon trading and the cap and trade system in California, we can see, first of all, that it is happening, that it's going to raise up to $2.5 billion this year for the state. And at the same time, we've been leading the country in terms of moving to a clean energy economy at the same time that we've been growing faster than the rest of the United States. So when we think about that policy and how it's impacted us, we can see that actually moving to a clean energy economy is part of the reason that California has been growing faster and producing jobs faster.
Do you have some numbers? I mean, how much has reducing carbon helped California's economy?
One of the ways that we think that energy really impacts is in terms of jobs. You know, I think that there has been a false argument against moving to a clean energy economy, which is that if you do so, it will be a job killer. Actually, what we're seeing is, A, that by the end of this year, we expect that there'll be up to 500,000 Californians employed in clean energy jobs. And in addition, we've just done a study within the last month that shows nationwide, if we accelerate the move to a clean energy economy, it will produce a net additional million jobs by 2030. So in fact, the argument that moving to clean energy is a job killer is false. Not only does it create net new jobs, it also reduces energy costs across society and makes people's take-home pays be higher. So actually what we're seeing in California is something that we expect to happen across the United States as it adopts clean energy.
Politically, President Obama came here, a lot of enthusiasm, making a number of pledges. Wants to move the U.S. forward. At the same time, we have the Republican Congress, which is, as a whole, fairly tentative, if indeed not skeptical, about dealing with climate disruption. How can the U.S. move forward at this time?
Well, we are huge believers in democracy, and that means the people of the United States, not just the elected officials of the United States. And what we've seen over the last 6 months is an incredible move across the board for Americans, regardless of political party, to accept the idea that clean energy is the future and we should move faster towards it, and the idea that doing so will prevent climate change. So that means we've seen a 12% move by Republicans in the last 6 months, which is unheard of. So really, when we think what has to happen is we think Americans, citizens, voters have to decide both that they agree with us that advanced energy is the future, which they do, and that it's important. And when they tell their people running for office that they insist that this happen, it will happen, because people running for office pay a lot of attention to the voters. So we really think this is just a traditional exercise in democracy. The people have to be listened to, and the people have to speak.
Looking outside the United States, what needs to be done to help places like India, for example, which, yes, it may be the number three or number four world emitter with more than a billion people, but their per capita emissions make them, what, like number 134. How can India move forward in these times when carbon use needs to be reduced, but that's all they have right now?
The way that people around the world generate and use energy is going to be driven by cost and technology. And so what we're really seeing in California, as I said, is the price of renewable energy dropping precipitously, and it will continue to drop. If you're used to technology-driven cost curves, it's not like it's going to stop today. People don't understand that it's going to continue to drop. So actually, what's going to happen for India is this is going to be, by far, the best choice they can make. They're going to look at it, and I think it's going to be overwhelmingly obvious, if it isn't already, that actually moving to solar, moving to wind, is going to be much cheaper than anything else they can do. So actually, they're not going to be being asked to sacrifice. Really, they're going to be making economic decisions that are in their own interest, but which also are going to be something that avoid greenhouse gas emissions.
How can they afford this? I mean, capital costs in India, 10, 12, 13% to borrow money. Company here in the U.S. that wants to go solar or wind can borrow that money, you know, for half, a third of that expense, and there are plenty of people willing to lend it to them. In other words, how do you get financing going on an international level at the scale that's needed to change things?
Actually, I think that's a great question, because when you think about the cost to India, this is by far the cheapest way of generating energy. And the question is the capital cost. And so I think as we move forward, that is where the coordination of nations and public and private entities are going to have to push to reward them for making what are smart decisions. Because I know that the capital costs in India are relatively very high to what they are in the United States, but that would also be true for coal plants. But the fact of the matter is we need to help them adopt energy in general, because if they do, they'll be adopting clean energy.
Well, but they can borrow money for coal much cheaper than they can for solar, because coal is proven there, their coal reserves, whereas they say, you know, the sun only can be used 6-8 hours a day, and there's less willingness to lend for solar, for example, over there.
Well, that is something where I think the international financial community needs to start checking, you know, exactly what their function is and what they're thinking. Because the fact of the matter is, if you look in the United States of America, a number of large banks have withdrawn from lending to coal, absolutely. So why they would think that's going to be different in different parts of the world, I'm not sure. But the fact of the matter is, I think if you look forward out over the life of a plant, which is approximately at least 30 years, the idea that that could be a good investment that's going to be a safe investment seems to me to be kind of silly.
What moves are you making around the world? Are you in India? Are you in Kenya? Are you in Chile? Where are you taking your expertise to bridge the knowledge gap as to how do you finance advanced technology?
Well, there are a couple of points I make. One is, I haven't been making my own investments for 3 years. Secondly, anything that we do in the renewable space, we've said we'll give away the profits so people don't think that I'm advocating for something so that I can make a buck for myself.
But you know how to do this, so you don't necessarily have to go and make money, but you know how to introduce people, you know how these things are done.
And that is what we're trying to do, which is we are trying to point out to people a different way of looking forward. I think to a very large extent, the financial world is controlled by their own computer programs. And we think that the accounting in those programs is faulty, because it doesn't include certainly the health costs of fossil fuel plants, but we also think the projections of costs and expectations are also faulty. So that's why we're pushing really hard for people to start thinking differently about projected costs, technologically driven energy, why we want them to include the costs of health and GHGs in fossil fuel energy, and why we're saying to people, look, the actual work that's been done shows these will create jobs, net, net, net.
Tom Steyer is the founder of NextGen. Thank you so much.
Steve, thank you very much for having me.